Hello, I'm David Coffin, artist in residence at Revels, and I'd like to welcome you to Revels Connects, our musical connection series. This set of programs offers intimate 45-minute salon-style performances with a variety of musical tradition bearers, plus a companion podcast with a featured artist hosted by the Massachusetts Cultural Council's Maggie Holtzberg, head of their Folk Arts and Heritage program. The series explores musical traditions from around the world with insights from our guest tradition bearers and performers and a deeper dive into the roots of their music, instruments, and cultural journeys through a curated interview. We are excited to collaborate with the Massachusetts Cultural Council. The Revels Connects Musical Connection series is sponsored in part by a grant from the Ithaca Foundation.
These are tough times for the performing arts, both for artists and for audiences, like those who regularly attend Revels events. The Revels Connect series is an online performance series initiated as a response to the pandemic that hit early in the spring of 2020. I'm Maggie Holtzberg, folklorist with Mass Cultural Council's Folk Arts and Heritage Program. And today's conversation is a companion podcast to Johnny Nichols' performance of Spirituals, which was filmed at Payson Park Church in Belmont, accompanied by Revels' former music director, Megan Henderson. Hello, Johnny.
Good morning. How are you, Maggie?
I'm okay. Let's start with a little bit about your background. You are originally from Louisiana, and I'd like you to talk about your musical journey, starting with the music you heard at home.
Yeah, absolutely. So my grandfather was an evangelist in the South, and he traveled all over the Gulf Coast preaching. And because we were a singing family, we all traveled with him and sang at these different religious events, conferences, and etc. So church music, religious music, especially gospel music, was something that was just embedded in my home. And you know, I loved it. I loved every moment of it. And then I do remember every Saturday morning, I listened to XM Radio Now and turn it on the classic stations, and I hear a lot of Motown stuff, and it brings me back to Saturday morning cleaning that my mom would turn on the record player and listen to all of these great jams while cleaning. But at the end of the day, it was because we were such a closely knit religious family, sacred music was something that was very important, and I listened to most of the time, everything from spirituals all the way to the current gospel songs.
What a wonderful environment to grow up in.
Yeah.
I remember you telling a story about your father and the use of a term called moans. Can you share that with us?
You know, so I didn't know what moans were back in the day. I just knew that they were a sign of something negative. My father would oftentimes moan, "Nobody knows the trouble I've seen," or even my grandmother would sit in her rocking chair and just rock and moan. And, you know, one of the things at an early age that I did recognize was my grandmother and my father seemed so much at peace. And anytime I would see any other African-American moan, they seemed to have some type of inner peace. And those moans, as I grew up and started looking and studying at them academically, those moans were really expressions because the words really couldn't express what you felt and how you felt it. And so you had to ascend to moans. My father would, after coming home from a long day's work, he would moan. My grandmother, as I said, sitting on the porch moaning. And I would honestly love to give anything in this world to be inside of their heads to know exactly what they were feeling and, you know, what they were thinking about. You know, those moans probably were thoughts about, you know, decades ago whenever their family was living, or a troublesome time or a joyous time. So, you know, it varied. And I find myself moaning now. And, you know, for me, it's something sacred and spiritual and calming within myself. And I don't even catch myself. Oftentimes my friends are like, Johnny, why are you singing? And I don't catch myself doing it. It just becomes a natural thing that is so important to the soul of African Americans.
For listeners who may not be familiar with the term moan, can you, I know I'm putting you on the spot, but can you give us an example of what a moan would sound like?
Yeah. If I were to sing, so moans, first of all, really kind of went outside of the structured piece of music. Oftentimes moans would embellish a lot on the melody, or new tune would even be created. So a moan, if I were to sing Moan Amazing Grace, it would sound And even then, you know, intonation wasn't an issue for me. Like, my intonation was all over the place. Rhythm, tempi were all over the place, but it was really organic about, you know, regarding how I felt at the time. So that would be but moans, just to save us everyone time, moans would be a lot longer than that. They it would be almost a dirge in the tempo. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's a moan. Yeah.
Sort of transportive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, it sounds like you left home to study music formally.
Yes.
Earning degrees in choral conducting and performance, and you've even worked extensively in theater. So I wanted to understand how that wide-ranging background serves you in the singing of spirituals.
Because you learn what a spiritual isn't. You know, but you also get a chance to see the important place that spirituals have in society, in the musical world. You know, there's no formalized definition of a spiritual. Spirituals have been around since the early 1600s, and scholars even today cannot even agree of what a spiritual is, but we can all agree with what a spiritual isn't. And not only that, but it, you know, with my spirituals and the contemporary songs I sing today, there's a connection of feeling and emotion and organic performance that most people don't ever get a chance to experience. You know, my background in gospel music and sacred music and spirituals have allowed me to speak earnest or to sing earnestly, to sing with grit, with authenticity. And it's honestly, I think that having all of these genres, these idioms of music in the back of my head really enhances each other. My knowledge in, you know, singing Motown really does help my singing of spirituals. My knowledge in classical music also helps, and vice versa. So it's all building blocks, and with spirituals being the foundation, because it was essentially one of the first forms of folk songs in America.
Talk a little bit about the history and the cultural context of spirituals, how they came about in this country and possibly, you know, roots in Africa.
Yeah. So, you know, spirituals are more unique to America, to Western civilization. And, you know, in the 1600s, when the first set of slaves came over, they were forced to sing even on the boat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but singing was something natural to slaves. You know, there's a lot of scholars who will write that folks on the continent of Africa, their influence of music was much stronger than any other continent or a geographical location on this earth. And so singing was incredibly, incredibly important to the slave. And when we came, when slaves came over to America, of course, slaves were forced to practice Christianity. And so out of their grief and out of their pain and out of their struggle, the spiritual was born. Out of their love and importance of music to what was forced upon them from their slave owners.
Give listeners a sense of what kind of contexts an enslaved person would sing a spiritual in.
Well, you know, it's funny because a spiritual is a subsection of what's called a slave song. Mm-hmm. So you have a whole bunch of slave songs, and those slave songs could include spirituals. They could include a ring shout. They could include a moan. They could include, you know, plantation songs, work songs, and so forth. So the spiritual was more of a... The context you asked, right?
Yeah, well, like, you know, think of daily life, different times of the day.
So the context was depending on what they needed it for. If you look at spirituals today, there is no tempo at all in any of the spirituals. Mm-hmm. There are no, typically whenever you look at a sheet of music at the top left or right hand, depending on the publisher's side, they will put some type of note, like sing this excitedly, sing this joyously, sing this beautifully, and so forth, right? None of that stuff really exists on a true spiritual because they were sung at that particular time for that particular need. Oftentimes, spirituals did have a double meaning, like keep your lamps trimmed and burning. That spiritual on its face, of course, was a sacred term that basically said, be ready for Jesus, right? And, but also it was a sign that said, hey, you know, tonight we're going to actually go and walk. So make sure your lamps are trimmed and are able to be burned throughout the night. So there was that context. There was the context, you know, even as they worked, you had spirituals, that helped with making sure that things were in line and folks were being worked together. And oftentimes you'll have this debate on how the speed of many of these spirituals. So say, for instance, Soon I Will Be Done with the Troubles of the World is a spiritual that oftentimes is up for debate with the tempo. So oftentimes you'll hear, soon I will be done with the troubles of the world, the troubles of the world, the troubles of the world. Or, soon I will be done with the troubles of the world. And that actually depended on what the conductor or the writer intended for that song to be. If it were a work song, you can imagine that it's very difficult for a slave to actually work and till the ground with a hoe or something, and it would be, we'll be done with the troubles, right? And working in that tempo would tire out the slave super fast. So, of course, it would be a lot slower. Soon I will be done with the troubles of the world. So it just, again, it just really depends on what was the purpose at the particular time. Spirituals spanned all sorts of emotions and reasons.
Yeah, and I often associate, I wanted to talk a little bit about call and response, because mm-hmm. I associate that with secular work songs, like you just mentioned, you know, field hollers or sea shanties, but yep. also with singing in a religious context, like the lining out of hymns in church. Yep. But can you describe a little bit how call and response might function in a spiritual?
So call and response is very interesting because they were often, as you said, used in work songs, but it was also an element of singing that helped the uneducated slave. Because if you sang... you know, the spiritual amen. So the song goes, amen, amen, amen. amen, amen, amen. And then you have a leader, see the little baby. And then everyone will go, amen. And those folks were oftentimes uneducated. They didn't know the words. And just like most most folk songs or folk stories, they were passed on. And so there was no lyric sheet. So everyone may not have known the lyrics. So that was one of the really importances of call and response. There was also that idea that spirituals were very organic. So yes, while you had see the little baby and everyone would go, amen. But if there was something that happened that day, something that was joyous, you know, we crossed over Jordan, saying that they successfully crossed over the river into safety. Then they would sing amen to that. Or if it was something like, you know, I escaped, you know, a punishment or something, folks would praise about that. So that call and response would act in sorts of a way to celebrate or to talk about what was happening at that particular time.
Right. So there would be a lot of improvisation and...
A lot of it.
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. A lot of improv and a lot of, again, one of the key elements to spirituals is how things were very organic to the soul.
Mm-hmm. From my understanding, you know, a spiritual is something that began as an oral tradition of religious singing, right, by African Americans during the time of slavery, and then evolved into a repertoire for solo and choral performances on the mm-hmm. concert stage. You know, mm-hmm. I'm thinking of touring groups from historically Black colleges and universities. Can you talk to us a little bit about how that transition took place? Because it's a huge shift.
Yeah. So as you said, it was an oral tradition and people didn't write stuff down. They didn't even know how to write down music, how to record music. And that was a phenomenon for the longest time that wasn't necessarily unique to just African Americans or slaves. It was unique to a lot of folks. And so you had your very academic and seasoned composers and academics and music, and they would take the spiritual and make it into something that was an art form. And one of the first people to do it, believe it or not, was Dvorak, the guy who wrote Symphony of the New World. He was one of the first persons to come out and say the spirituals is a very important art form. And of course, there's no surprise, his colleagues across Western Europe were all like, no, because of course it was African Americans who were singing it. But once he actually started naming spirituals as a legitimate musical art form, people started writing it, and they wrote it down in unison first because they didn't really recognize. Now, mind you, these are white people, these are Europeans. They didn't understand the harmonies that were associated with African singing. And so eventually there was a publication called Plantation Songs, Plantation and Cabin Songs, I believe that was the name of it. And they were the first to start writing down harmonies. And their idea was they wanted to capture the real sound of slaves, because slaves, Africans, would oftentimes sing in three or four part harmony. And of course, whenever spirituals or slave songs were sung, they were likely songs that were in four or three part harmony. So that came about. And then you had the Fisk Jubilee Singers, which was an HBCU out of Tennessee. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, the oldest HBCU out there. And they started putting them down for choruses for the stage. And it was really important because it gave society an opportunity to really understand a spiritual and to be exposed to spirituals for the first time. So once they started taking these normal spirituals that were just written, you know, to be frank, very hymn-like, you know, very four-part, very kind of structured. And then you had different composers to come in and actually make these wonderful arrangements to the spirituals that you hear today on the big stage.
Yeah, talking about following up on that, style in the singing of spirituals, would you agree then, I think you basically said this, that the style of singing spirituals became much more arranged, a mix of folk and European classical influences for concert halls?
Yeah.
If that happened, can you talk about like what was gained and possibly what was lost?
That's actually a really good question. What was gained and what was lost? I think what was gained was this universal use of the spiritual and this universal knowledge and appreciation of the spiritual, for sure. And not only that, but it was the energy. It was the storytelling in spirituals. Because like I said before, spirituals were used for a very specific thing at that very specific time. Arrangers have come about to write spirituals to help tell a story within that spiritual. So if you hear something like Deep River, right? The tempo of it is typically very slow. It typically is a song for mourning or for reflection, right? And so the original arranger of that has set the music up in a way that it tells that story of reflection or mourning or loss or something like that. So we've gained the storytelling aspect of it that is very specific. And oftentimes, I guess what has been lost is the idea that spirituals were sang for so many different reasons. So like Deep River, oftentimes you hear this as a slow piece and it's, you know, mourning, but have you ever heard it as an upbeat piece of music? Have you ever heard it as an inspirational piece of music? And you don't really hear it as that anymore because we've kind of pigeonholed these songs in a certain way. So if anything, I think that is the element that's lost, is the authenticity behind what was sung and the flexibility behind the spirituals.
Yeah, that's really well said. And it leads me to ask you about a word you used earlier, grit. Mm-hmm. And when are you ready to perform a spiritual? Tell us that story about your mentor.
Oh, Louis Neighbors, a fantastic, fantastic mentor, as well as a singer and teacher, grew up in Louisiana as well and traveled the world singing spirituals as well as classical pieces. Really big basso profundo. He stood about 8 foot tall. The funniest thing about him is that he was about 8 foot tall, about 300 pounds, and drove a Mini Cooper. So it was... So he always came in at like 8:45 on the dot, and it was just one of those things that I would like to just stand outside and sit outside to watch him get out of his car. but a good guy. But he, I remember him first teaching me about the spiritual. And, you know, we sang, you know, some, I forget what simple spiritual it was. And I said, Mr. Neighbors, I want to learn an actual spiritual. He said, Johnny, you're not ready. And I said, I'm not ready. What do you mean? And he was like, you know, you don't know heartache. You don't know true triumph. You don't know what it's like to actually have some type of situation in your life that you feel enough that you can express it and emote it. And of course, I was like, oh, psh, yes, I am. I'm totally okay to do that. So he gave me a spiritual. And I remember 30 seconds into me opening my mouth, he stops, slaps me across my head, my forehead, and said, Johnny, you're singing like a white boy. And didn't know what that meant. And I also was thinking, okay, well, you're teaching me classical technique, so of course I'm going to quote-unquote sound like a white boy. But it gave me some time to really understand what he meant by that. And I forget what spiritual it was, but basically he was saying that I have a technique. I was not performing it in a way that spirituals were supposed to be performed, that emote in such a way. Yes, I agree that spirituals are songs that can be sang by any race, by any age, because we all go through things. And that's why I thought I was ready, because I've been through things. You know, my young 19-year-old self thought that I've been through some things. But to perform a spiritual with the correct style meant that there were things that you had to really lean into, like the dialect. Like, instead of singing children, you sing churin or chillin. If you sing father, you sing father. You know, for the longest time, what's the name of that song? I did not understand Joshua Fit the Battle of Jericho, right? Joshua Fit the Battle of... But it took me a while to understand that fit, even though it meant fought, because I would always self-correct, Joshua fought the battle. But it's supposed to be fit because that was the dialect. And so I had to learn how to lean into those emotions and feelings and technicalities that a slave would. I also had to think about, you know, even like the moans. How do I embellish and do bends and let my voice emote in a way that actually told my pain or my triumph in a story? So oftentimes when I do hear spirituals or sing spirituals or even teach them, I teach the style that's associated with it. And not only just the style, but what the voice should sound like. How the voice, you can change, manipulate your voice in so many ways, but how can you manipulate your voice to sound rich and smooth and lyrical in what you're doing? Because that is, that in a performance sense, that is what we need in order for you to actually tell the story in an authentic way. So that grit is that really digging and leaning and the study behind what that is.
It's fascinating. I mean, it's like you have to be culturally informed, but also a trained singer. So yes. It's this marvelous mix of folk and classical tradition.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You embrace so beautifully. So.
Yeah. Thank you. I love it. You know, it's almost theatrical in a sense. I'm sorry to cut you off, but it's almost theatrical. Being able to, you know, in a theater sense, you have 2 hours to tell a whole story. The challenge with the spiritual is, and not a bad challenge, but how do you take a 2-minute song and tell the lifetime of a slave? And so you get a chance to exercise some of your theatrical chops to really emote that. And you know that you've successfully done that if you have been able to have the audience really stand back and reflect and see that whole entire picture of the slave in just that one song.
Well, is there anything I haven't thought to ask that you want to add?
You know, I talked about what a spiritual is not. And one of the things that we've said is in the world of academia is that a spiritual is not gospel. And I recently had this conversation not too long ago. It's easy for one to think that gospel is a spiritual and a spiritual is gospel, but it's not. Both, yes, are idioms of music that are primarily celebrated by the African-American culture. And they both have sacred text. But one, the spiritual was an organic piece. A spiritual was a folk piece. A spiritual was a piece that was ever so changing until it was actually written down. And even the words were changing. A gospel piece is, yes, it derived from spirituals, but it also, more importantly, has influences of jazz and the blues, especially in the chord structure and how they're written. And I want to make sure that that's important for people to understand, is that a spiritual is not gospel and a gospel is not spiritual. That's one of the huge things to remember.
Well, thank you. And thank you for enlightening us on the world of spirituals.
Absolutely. This has been a pleasure.
Okay. Thank you,
Jeff. Yes. Thank you.